You know, it's funny because I was talking to somebody early this morning. They called me up, one of the guys. I have a lot of, I've been on Zoom for about, a year now we've been on the Zoom. I do a lot of Zoom meetings. And so I have another group, another, you know, when I first came in, they said, you got to get a home group. That's my sponsor said. And I said to him, I said, well, what group do you belong to? He said, you wouldn't like my group, you know. And of course, I became very then interested in joining this group. So I joined his group and the Killian Pines group. And there's a whole story about that that I'm not going to go into. Maybe if I had some time, I'll go into it. It's a funny story. But I had this home group, and I've always had a home group. I've always had a group where I just felt comfortable. You know, it's like that show Cheers. I mean, I don't know, some of you guys know that show, Jay, you know, everybody knows your name, and always had a home group. I don't know, I thought it was important. My sponsor said it was important. He said, I want you to do three things for me. Number one, it says, join a home group. And number two, every day read the 24-hour book and ask God's help to stay sober.
Amen.
I don't remember him asking me whether I believed in God, but he just said, do that. And he said, number three, if you ever feel like having a drink, call me first. He said, but don't call me after you drink. I really don't want to hear from you after you drink. Call me before you drink. And I remember one time I wanted a drink because my fiance at the time or something got me all pissed off or something. And girls would do that to guys. And I was going to drink. I was going to show her. I was going to punish her by drinking. Alkies think like that. I don't know. I was going to punish her by drinking. And so I promised my sponsor. So I called my sponsor, and the phone was busy. And then I called him again. The phone was busy. And I called him again, and the phone was busy. And then I called him again, and the phone rang. And it rang, and it rang, and nobody answered. And I just hang up the phone. And I told him, I said, you know, you told me to call you on the flipping phone. If I ever want a drink, I want a drink. Yesterday I called you, and it was busy, and it was busy, and I hung on the phone, and then it rang, and nobody answered, and you told me to call you. And he says, well, did you drink? I said, no, I didn't drink. He says, you see, it works. So. There's no fighting these guys, you know. They just got an answer for everything, you know. And so we were talking about the step series that I do now that I've been doing. You know, I've been doing step series, you know, for 30, 35 years. And when I first started doing it, you know, your stories change. You change. How's about that? I came when I'm 31. I'm 72. I wasn't married. I've been married over 40 years now. I mean, you change, you know. And, you know, you put on a little weight, you know, and that kind of stuff. And stuff happens. And you change your way of thinking, you know. And so when I first started doing these step series, it was more, how do you do it? You know, it was more about how do you do it? Because I didn't have a lot of experience living the steps. I didn't have a lot of experience living sober, you know. I was sort of, you know, at 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, you're just getting used to how crazy you are. You spend the first 10 years just to realize, I am really fucking sick, you know. Like, this is crazy shit. I don't want to drink, but killing myself is a definite possibility. And you know, so when I used to do the steps, I'd like explain the steps. I'd like go through each step. This is how I did it, and this idea, and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, I'm in my 41st year now. After, you know, 40 years of working, it's like what's that show with the Karate Kid thing with wax on, wax off, wax on, wax
karate
off.
Kid.
You know,
was that? It was the Karate Kid.
Right? So, You do the steps over and over again, the 10 step over and over again. You do them over and over and over again. And, you know, at first they're all weird and unusual. And the sponsor says, do an inventory on that. And you're sharing, and you're doing all these steps. And you know you're doing them. And then after around 10 years or so, you just sort of like, you do them without even thinking about them because that's what you do because you've been doing them. And then after around 15 or 20 years, you're working the steps. You don't even know you're working the steps because it just becomes a way of life. It becomes a way of life. Your thinking becomes a way of life. You know, taking inventory becomes a way of life. You know, how you talk about people and how you don't talk about people, it becomes a way of life. And then after, you know, 30, 40 years, somebody says, do you still do the steps? I said, I don't really do them. I live them. I've had not that I'm perfect, but you have that personality change. You know, Dr. Jung talks about ideas, emotions, and attitudes that are guiding forces of your life. It moves aside, and you become dominated by a whole new set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes. You know, man, the same guy who was talking to me this morning said to me, he says, so it's the idea you just, whatever happens to you, you just forgive people? I said, well, I think that's the intermediate goal. I think that's the intermediate goal. The transition goal. I think the transition goal is when you're hurt, somebody hurts your feeling, maybe the transition goal is even if you do something stupid or react, you make an amends, you know, you do a 10 step. Then maybe a little bit farther along the line, maybe the real transition goal becomes when somebody hurts your feelings, you don't even react. You just forgive them, you know? Maybe you get to some point. Maybe you get to a point where, when things bother you, you know, because I'm a sensitive guy. I used to say my sponsor, I'm sensitive. He says, no, great artists are sensitive. You just touch it.
You just touch.
Whereas, like my other sponsor said to me, that story I told you, it was a true story. He said, you're upset because you're upsettable. I used to tell him all the reasons I was upset. Ah, you're upset because you're upsettable. Maybe at one point you just don't get upsettable, you know. And so, maybe one of the intermediate, maybe around 17 or 18 years or 20 years, I don't know when it happens, you basically, things happen and people do stuff or people disappoint you or whatever it is, you know, they just act the way this ain't exactly well, people's anonymous, you know, even in AA, people will disappoint you and you just forgive them. And maybe that's a point you come to where you get to the point where you just don't stay pissed at people. You know, maybe for 30 seconds and then you just let it slide. It's like Teflon, you know? But I don't think that's the final goal. I think the final goal is really getting to the point where you don't have to forgive them because you're not affected by it. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
You know, I used to say, you know what Alki say? I used to say this all the time. When I get all mad and pissed off, and somebody say, well, you know, don't get so mad. And I say, well, if it happened to you, if it happened to you, you'd feel this because I absolutely believe that. If it happened to you, if the same thing had happened to me, if the guy bounced the check on you, you know, I happen to believe that there was only one way to react. Kill the son of a bitch, you know what I mean? Shoot him, you know? But then I ran into people in AA. They'd have cancer and they were happy. Somebody would do something terrible to them and they weren't upset. And I'd say, they're like amazed. People are like amazing, you know. And I would throw them into my we column, you know. If you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain. In other words, I developed a we of people. And they were, to be honest with you, mostly old timers, 30 and 40 years and stuff like that. And I didn't even know what they had. It was strange to me. They just didn't seem to react. They seemed to be relaxed. I wasn't relaxed, you know. My feet were going 50 miles per hour and I was just always looking at my watch and, you know, I was looking around and if they had cell phones, I'd probably be texting and all sorts of stuff. And I was just nuts. I was just alcoholic, you know, that kind of thing. But I wanted what these guys had. So I hung out with them and that kind of thing. I didn't know how to get it. I didn't even know what they had, you know, they could have been, I don't know what the story is. So I hung out with those guys and a lot. So, like I tell that story, and it's a true story where I was complaining about some guy bouncing a check on me for $500 and money's not important. It's just right up there with oxygen. And, you know, it pissed me off. And I was telling everybody I could find about it, going to AA meetings, telling everybody, you know. So I told my sponsor and he said, well, and, you know, he could tell that I was going for 2 days talking about this guy. You know, resentment being the number one offender and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, but if it happened to you, you'd feel the same way, you know. And, you know, they're trying to talk me down off the ledge. I said, well, if it happened to you, you'd feel the same way. And I believe, you know, and he said, well, how would you feel if it didn't bother you? And I said, I don't understand the question. Well, how would you feel if it didn't bother you? He said, I didn't understand it. I said, I don't understand. Well, I really didn't understand the question. I really didn't understand. I mean, I'm not joking. I didn't understand the question. Guy bounced $500 on me. I would tell people, they say, oh, yeah, that's a shitty thing to do. Everybody understood what I was talking about. I can tell you this. Everybody I drank with would have understood exactly what I was fucking talking about. You know what I mean? They say, let's go get him and kill him, you know? And they'd all say, ah, what an asshole, you know, and all that stuff. And most of the people in AA understood what I was talking about. But I told my sponsor, he didn't get it. You know, he said, well, how would you feel if it didn't bother you? And I'm sitting here trying to, one of us is crazy. No, seriously, one of us is crazy. What does it say about old ideas? The result is nil until you let go out of, absolutely. You know, and how do you know what your old idea is? Here's the question, how do you know what an old idea is? Is getting upset when somebody steals money from you an old idea? I mean, how could that be a fucking old idea? No, I mean, I'm serious. How could it be an old idea that if somebody steals money from you and you get upset, you got to get rid of that? I mean, is that the dumbest, most insane thing you ever thought about? Mm. So I'm telling this guy, man, you got to hunt for these guys all over planet Earth, because I tell you this, you don't have to be alcoholic. You go anywhere on the planet and say somebody stole $500 from you and you're pissed and you want to hit, you know, everybody would understand what you're saying about it. Who would tell you there's something wrong with that? Everybody feels like that, except for these 30-year sober assholes, you know what I mean? They're like stupid. And so they ask questions like, well, how would you feel if it didn't bother you? And you say, you don't even understand the question because we're speaking English, they're speaking Yugoslavian, you know, in Czechoslovakian or something, you know. And so finally he said, listen, don't you want, I said, I'm asking you, how would you feel if it didn't bother you? And I think I said, how would I, and I repeated, I said, how would I feel if it didn't bother me that he stole $500 from me? He said, yeah, how would you feel if it didn't bother you? How would I feel if it didn't bother me? Yeah, if it didn't bother you, how would you feel? If it didn't bother me, I'd feel fine. There you go. There you go. And he walks away. What the hell are you supposed to do with that shit? You know what I mean? I'll tell you what to do with that shit. 20, 30 years down the road, when shit like that doesn't bother you, you live a happy life. Mm. You don't talk about people behind their back and you don't get pissed off. It ain't going to get you money back anyway. But how do you get there? How about this? How about that? But that's not even it. How about this? How about, you know how you stay married for 40 years? It's hard to live with another human being. That's okay. I forgive you. I wasn't even, the truth is, I don't even forgive you because I'm not even upset with you. So how do you stay married for 40 years? You know, you guys have all been in relationships or whatever the shit you call those things you get involved in. I wouldn't call it a relationship. It's like a wrestling match or something. I don't know what the hell it is you guys get involved in. Oh my God, Alki's in love. Jesus Christ. So in any event, you know, if you go to a meeting, they say, well, let's have a meeting on relationships. It's all about sex, you know, and it's all they want to talk about, romantic relationships, you know, just how do I hook up with somebody? Oh, we're getting together. I found the perfect person. Yeah, we have something in common. What? Our disease. That's bound for fucking success. That's like two bad drivers getting together and their rates are going to be lower because there's less chance. So in any event, what was I even talking about? Senility takes over. So you're married for 40 years and, you know, I don't care how much you love the person, how much you care about them. You know, after 10, 15 years, a bunch of kids and everything, who gives a shit about sex anymore, you know? You just want to, you know, have a good bowel movement or something. I don't know what the deal is. I mean, you know, it's, you know, I mean, really, 20 years with the same, you know, 30, you know. And, you know, and you're looking for non-judgmental love and understanding from the person who picks up your underwear, you know what I mean? And you ain't going to get it, you know? I mean, forget it. It ain't going to happen, you know? And you're looking and you're thinking that, why doesn't she treat me better? Oh, but those gals in AA would treat me better, you know? Yeah, yeah. I'll tell you the truth. The truth is, if you want non-judgmental love and understanding, if you're married, you want non-judgmental love and understanding, this is where you get it. You know? You guys don't, you're, whether you guys are, whether you guys have a roof over your head or not a roof over your head doesn't depend upon whether I pay the mortgage, right? In other words, we meet here, we care about each other, we love each other, but if I'm broke and I don't have money for the mortgage, it doesn't affect you, does it? In other words, the truth of the matter is I don't affect you. You know, my lifestyle doesn't affect you. You know, if I turn on the lights while you're sleeping and, you know, and I'm tired and you say, you woke me up or something, that doesn't affect, you know, you're not affected by me. And when two people, you get affected by each other. Don't be looking for don't be looking for AA love with the person you're married to for 40 years. You're going to get, there's going to be arguments. There's going to be shit going on and that kind of stuff. So how do you survive 40 years? And, you know, and how you survive, one of the ways you survive is, I think, the next step, and that is you don't even notice it's happening. How about that? You don't have to forgive anybody because you don't even notice it happened. How about that? You know, I'm walking around with a sponsor, with a sponsee, and my wife says something to me, and my sponsee, who's having problems with his wife, says, did you hear what she just said to you? And I said, no, what? You know? What? She said that, oh, yeah, right, whatever. Well, you don't need, what happens when, you know, alcoholics are very alert. What does it say? The wrong, you know, one of the great things you have to learn about the big book is it tells you shit about yourself that you don't know about. Even if you don't realize it's telling you, or even if you're saying, no, that's not me, 20 years down the road, you'll say, that's me. It says the wrongdoings of others, fancied or real. That means imaginary shit. You know, you imagine that people don't like, you imagine that people are thinking bad thoughts of you. You know, you pass somebody in the hall or something like that, and you say hello, and they don't answer you back. You say, what an asshole. And you think about, what the hell's wrong with him? And you realize that his wife just died in a car accident. His mind is all over. He's not even looking at you. You know what I mean? And you've already got him pegged as like some sort of jerk off, you know? And, you know, we're real high maintenance sort of people. And but as things go along, you change, and I change. So one of the things I was talking to this guy about, and I'm trying to get back to the subject, you know, trying to get this train robbed. I'm going to actually talk about the fourth step, by the way. This will be a challenge. Let's see how I get to it, okay? So one of the things, you know, so what happens is, one of the things that, happens is, and now I forgot whatever I was going to talk about, so forget that. Let me read this. It'll come back. So let me read this. This is page, since I'm going to talk about the fourth step, let me read the last page of the big book, which probably has nothing to do with the fourth step. Or maybe it has a lot to do with the fourth step.
Everything.
Maybe I'm like doing, maybe I'm coming at it from a different angle. You know, I mean, sometimes you can come from things at a different, you know, from a different angle. What if I come from it at a different angle that you never thought of before? What can I say? Well, I never thought about that before. You know what I mean? This is a different angle. So this is what it says on page 164. It says, still you may say, by the way, you know who they wrote this book for? Anybody know who they wrote this book for? For you! This is not rocket science. They wrote it for you. You're alcoholics, right? But still you may say. What's your name?
Shannon.
Well, still, Shannon may say. You may say, but I will not have the benefit of contact with you who write the book. You know, man, if only Bill Wilson sponsored me or Dr. Bob or something like that. Instead of this dork I'm stuck with, you know. And I will not have the benefit of contact with you who write the book. We cannot be sure. God will determine that. There he is again. I'm telling you, he's a big deal. When they tell you, don't worry about the God thing, whatever, you know. With you who write the book, we cannot be sure. God will determine that, so you must remember that your real reliance is always upon him. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. So there you've just been told something about yourself that you didn't know. You're addicted to fellowship. You're addicted to fellowship. You crave fellowship possibly even more than you crave alcohol or any substance. You need people around you to care about you. You can't stand being alone. The girls have to have the guys have to have the girls, everybody has to have somebody. If you're not in AA, if you're not fellowshipping here, you will fellowship. You'll fellowship out there. You'll fellowship at the bar. You will find a fellowship out there, and the chances are, considering the fact that you're an alcoholic and insane, you will fellowship with some sick freaking people. You will fellowship with heroin, with guys that are doing heroin or cocaine or smoking dope or just don't give a shit or are mentally diseased or something. You will find your fellowship, or even worse, you'll be at home and you'll be fellowshipping with yourself and, you know, I don't know, the TV set or yourself and some radio or something. You're going to be fellowship. Don't believe me. You will not be alone. You will be craving fellowship. Maybe you'll just start drinking a drug and start fellowshipping with all those imaginary people in your mind. Your ex-boyfriends, your ex-girlfriends, you know, and stuff. You'll be fellowshipping. So let me ask some. How did you? I was told that the man and woman you'll be in the next 5 or 10 years will depend upon the people you hang out with and the books you read. And they start telling you that in AA, they say it different ways of saying it. Like one way they'll say it is, I think I turned this stupid thing off. They'll say things like, stay away from slippery people and slippery places, and they say all sorts of things. But the bottom line is the person you're going to be in the 5 years are going to be profoundly affected by the people you hang out with. Because the one unless until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious of true happiness. He'll find none at all. And once you get rid of the alcohol, which is really not a big deal, it honestly isn't a big deal. I know somebody back there, some old timer saying, no, you know, just don't drink and go to me. Don't drink and go to me. Put the plug in the jug. But, you know, the truth is if all you do is don't drink and go to me, means you're going to drink anyway. It's going to happen because that's not alcoholism. Alcohol is but a symptom of our disease. The real disease centers your mind, not your body. If you stay as freaking insane as you are, as an alcoholic, you're going to drink again or do something else crazy. You're going to drink self-pity or drink depression or drink. You're going to do something else, so it ain't going to matter anyway. So the point is, so the person you will be in the next 5 years, and the other thing about being alcoholics. Is alcoholics are extremely, extremely affected by the people they hang around, who they want to be a part of. They can't stand rejection. They will whore them. We are whores. We will sacrifice anything to have you say, oh, Shannon, you know, she's the best, you know, to get a compliment, to have people care for us, you know? You know, if we're hanging around with the Klan, we're like the most prejudiced Klansmen in the world, you know? If we're hanging around with liberals, we're a liberal. We're hanging around with conservatives, we're conservatives. We're going to do whatever drug they're doing, we're doing. Whatever they're smoking, whatever they're drinking, we're going to do whatever we got to do to fit in. So that people like us. And so the bottom line is that thing that used to kill you on the outside, you know what I mean? Fitting in with crazy people and doing crazy shit, you know what I mean? Like to have killed you actually can save your life in AA, depending upon who you hang out with. Because you'll find yourself hanging out with crazy people who say, how would you feel if it didn't bother you? And the more you hang out with them, you'll start turning into them. You'll start thinking, as crazy as it sounds, you start getting it, and you start thinking how they think. If you want what we have, and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. You got to develop a we. Who's your we going to be in the bar? Now, how did you pick your friends before you came here? Did it depend upon who has the drugs? Did it depend upon who was smoking the same dope you were smoking, or drinking the same drink you were drinking, hanging around in the same bar you were? How about, did it depend upon I don't know, was it about lust? Was it about, what was it? Was it about, just people you felt comfortable with because they, they thought like you did. I mean, consider the fact you're insane. But they were insane too, but it was like your kind of insanity, so you felt good about it. How did you pick it? Did you pick them because they were cool, because you liked their car, because they were rich, they had money, because of the sex? I mean, how did you pick the people you hung out with? I mean, if the book says, if you want what we have, whatever we have, whatever that thing is, not what you had, if you want what we have, the people who wrote the book, the people who didn't apologize to talking about God, all the people that they wrote that book, the founders, and you're willing to go to any length to get it, just like you'll go to any length, guys, just like you'd go to any length to nail that gal in the bar at 3 o'clock in the morning. Just like any lounge lizards, I was a lounge lizard. Any lounge lizards in here? You're hanging around drinking, looking at the gals and everything like that, and what's the goal? The goal, right? So, believe me, I wanted what she had, and I was willing to go to any length to get it. You know what I mean? And that's the deal. I know women aren't like that. You understand what I'm saying? So, I don't know anything about women, but. I mean, is that how bad you want it? Do you want it? So how did you determine your friend? How do you determine who you hang out with in here? I mean, this ain't exactly Well People's Anonymous. I mean, surprise, surprise, there's some sick, crazy people in here. You're going to hear some sick, crazy shit. You're going to hear some crazy stuff. There's going to be some people here saying this stuff is bullshit. They're going to tell you to go here and go. How do you determine who you're going to hang with? That's a good question, because how you determine who you're going to hang with is going to have a great it's going to greatly affect where you're going to be in 5 years. Whether you're going to be in jail, whether you're going to be drinking, whether you're going to get this program. Like you lie down with dogs, you get up with fleas. How do you decide who to hang out with, in this deal? So, what does that have to do with the fourth step? So, I mean, you crave fellowship, you crave people. All of a sudden, you find yourself in here. Wake up. Wake up. Somebody's trying to get in.
Chris, let him in.
Yeah, the couch. Chris on the couch.
He's 20 minutes late.
Oh, that's okay. He's on his couch. You guys don't know Chris on the couch. He's a good guy, brand new. So how do you figure that out? Who you want to hang out with once you're in here. So what does that have to do with the fourth step? So I'm going to leave that. I'm going to put that off to the side. Okay? And now we're going to go on to something else. Some of you have heard before. I think you've heard this before. I want to talk about when I got married the first time. Not unusual in AA to have like two wives or three or four, but that's just the way we are, that's the way it is,
Not at the same time.
Not at the same time, usually, but that's it. So I meet some gal. She's beautiful, right? Because I've never heard a guy in AA say, I met some gal, she was ugly, so I married her. They're all beautiful. They're all like beauty queens, right?
And take her out of her misery.
Right. Thinking about my favorite song, if you want to be married, if you want to be happy for the rest of your life, never make a pretty woman your life. My personal point of view, get an ugly girl to marry you, And that's, you guys never heard that song. It's an old song. You got to listen to it. It's very good. But amen. So I meet this girl. She's very pretty, and I say to myself, which is not an unusual thought, if only I had this gal, I'd be okay. Now, I've had that thought every day my entire life, at least five times a day. If only, like gals say, if only I had that blouse, I'd be okay. If only I lost 50 pounds, I'd be okay. Guys say, if only I was more buff, I'd be okay. If only... Who knows, if only I had a new car, I'd be okay. If only I'd just, guys, we're constantly telling ourselves, if we had this, and we believe that shit. By the way, we believe it. We believe, we are addicted to the things of this world. We are absolutely, absolutely convinced that, this AA thing is good. It's nothing wrong with AA. I love AA. I'm spiritual, not religious, whatever the hell it is. But let's face it, we all know if somebody would just give me $1 million, that would solve my entire fucking problem, okay? You know, it's the same thing is good, but we know what would really solve the problem. $1 million, a hot chick, you know, a new car, a yacht, you know, whatever. So I meet this gal and I go, by the way, did you ever realize that whenever you say to yourself, if only I had a new car, I'd be okay. How many people have ever said the phrase, if only I had, how many people have said that? Raise your hand. Oh, you got two people in the whole group haven't said it, or actually they've fallen asleep, okay? So I want you to understand something. When you say that, when you tell yourself that, if only I had a car, I'd be okay, what you're saying to yourself is, I'm not okay. You spend your entire life saying shit, and you don't even know what you're saying. You spend your entire life saying, I'm not okay. I'm not okay. I'm not okay. And then you wonder why every once in a while this voice comes through and you hear this. I'm an asshole. I ought to kill myself. I'm a fucking loser. I'll never be okay. You spend your entire life putting yourself down thinking you're a piece of shit. And if anybody looks at you funny or looks at you in a condescending way or talks to you like they're trying to help you out, but you know something? There's nothing a person that has low self-esteem hurts. There's nothing that a person who has low self-esteem hates more than somebody who seems to be treating them like they have low self-esteem. And we just go fucking ballistic. You know? Even if somebody's trying to help us, we can't handle it because we're such damaged goods. We're so damaged. And that's the real alcoholism. That's the shit that doesn't go away because you stop drinking. As a matter of fact, what the drinking does is make you feel like you're the best, the brightest. You don't know who you're fucking talking to. The drinking is the only thing that works. Makes us feel prettier, handsomer, better, anything like that. Without that, we know we're totally unworthy. So here's the deal. So I'm sitting there and I'm saying, if only I could have her, I'd be okay. And I put on the full court press to try to get that thing happening, and I ingratiate myself with the parents and all the bullshit and everything like that. And I get her to marry me. We have a kid. We have a house on Miami Beach. And I'm not going to go through the rest of the story, but I am going to go through a certain amount of the story for a certain reason, a different reason. So if you had asked me, so here's the story. Here's my story that I would tell you now. The story I would tell you now would be, and I married her because I wanted to marry her because I knew that would fix me and everything like that. And everything was great. I loved their parents. And they loved me and I loved her and she loved me. And I had a child, and had a house. And then, I don't know, about 6 months later, you know, I wasn't happy. I mean, it wasn't exciting. You know, I mean, you know, I had the wife and I had the house and then I had to work and I had to do the stuff you do when you're married. And I'd working for the state's attorney's office, and every night I'd be going over the bar and drinking with the guys, and I'm looking at the gals on the dance floor. They're all pretty, you know, and it's not that my wife wasn't pretty, but, you know, how can I explain it? It's like you buy a new car, and it's the greatest thing in the world, and you feel great, and 6 months later, it's like a used car. You know, I mean, it's just something that happens, you know? And, you know, it doesn't matter how nice the car was if it's used. You know what I mean? There are nicer cars out there. So I'm looking at the gals and the dads. I never cheated on my wife. And let me tell you something. Even though I wanted to cheat on my wife, I never did. Not because I'm a nice guy, but probably because I thought he'd get caught or something. I don't even know why. But I'll tell you what, I congratulated myself on the fact that I was so virtuous that I didn't cheat on my wife. You know what I mean? Because my life had become sort of boring. I got a wife, I got a kid, you know, I'm going home to work. It's not like you're going to the bars every night and, you know, maybe there'll be a new one. You know what I mean? Or it's like hunting, you know what I mean? Like it's exciting, you know. True, new love is like exciting. Romance. There's no romance, you know what I mean? When you got the same person for 40 years, for God's sakes, you know? It's no romance, you know? It's no candlelight. It's like, who's going to change the diapers, you know? It's like... And so I would get to the bars and I would start drinking. And of course that thing clicks in, and I'm coming home at 2:00 in the morning. almost every other night or three nights a week. Took a while. She's there with the kid at home for 5 years. And then what happens is she tells me, you come home drunk one time, I'm leaving you. So that night I come home drunk. Didn't mean to. I just went to the bar and I told my best friend, Doug, I said, you know, Ronnie says, if I come home drunk one more time, she's going to leave me. He says, Russell, she's never going to leave you. She loves you. You're the greatest guy in the world. She's crazy about you. I'm thinking, hey, that's exactly what I'm thinking. You know what I mean? That's why I love these guys in the bar. They are the wisest guys in the world. They know me. And so I have a drink, and I'm only 15 minutes away from the house. So I have time for another drink. And next thing I know, it's 4 o'clock in the morning, and they drive me home. I mean, there may have been a time like a week before or 2 weeks before that I might have had one drink and got home, but it wasn't that. I had reached the point where I had crossed that invisible line where once I took that first drink, I didn't know what you know, it was, you know, Sally Bob at the door. It was over. And then she kicked me out of the house. I was out of the house. And I was happy. As I'm walking away from my house, everything that's important to me, it should have been important to me, I was happy. Because now I was free. I was free to go out with the gals in the bar, which is what I wanted to do all the time anyway. You know, I didn't give a crap about it. I mean, I say it in that way because it really is the truth. You know, but the truth is I didn't give a crap about her. I didn't give a crap about my kid. I only gave a crap about my sex life. I only gave a crap about other women. I mean, that's the truth. This is the truth. I'm telling you the truth now. I know it's the truth because I've done the fourth step. And I've done the fifth step. And I know who I was. I don't try to pretty it up and say, well, I'm basically a good boy, and if it wasn't for the alcohol, I wouldn't have done it. Bullshit. You know what I mean? I'm a selfish, self-centered, evil son of a bitch. And I don't give a shit about anybody except myself. That's the deal. And about a week later, she filed for divorce, but then we went to a marriage counselor because she wasn't a whore. Because she did have integrity. Because she did believe if you're married, you stay married till death do us part. She did believe in all that bullshit. You know what I mean? That religious bullshit, you know? That's why alcoholics hate religion. There's like too many rules. Too many rules that decent people have to follow. They want to make their own rules, you know, and their own deal, you know? And so I went to the marriage counselor. He asked my wife, what do you want to change about Russell? She was saying something. I think she said something about drinking. I'm not sure because I wasn't listening. Because I didn't want to get back into the marriage. He turned to me, he said, what do you want to change about your wife? I said, I just want to date other women. That was the end of the session. You know? And that's the true story about me and who I was. And let me tell you something. I'd love to say that alcohol made me do it. I was cold stone sober. When she told me to come home drunk one more time, I was cold stone sober when I heard that. When I went to the bar, I told Doug, I said, she said that. I remembered it. When I went into the marriage counselor's office and I said, I just want to date other women, I was cold stone sober when I said that. You know what I mean? I did most of the things I did to hurt people. What does it say in the big book? Was selfish. It says we made decisions in the past, selfish decisions, which put in a position to be hurt. I made these decisions because I was selfish, self-centered, and I had no integrity. You know what I mean? I operated on feelings. The only thing that's important to me is my feelings. If I feel like I want another woman, I'll figure out a way how to bust the marriage so I can get one. And I'll put some sort of fancy name on it. Now, if you had asked me before I came to AA, why did you get divorced? This is what I would have told you. And this is would have been the truth. The truth. I said, we got married. We were very young. And after we got married, she tried to change me, which she did, because she kept on saying, you need to stop drinking and hanging out in the bar. Now, and the truth is, I drank in the bars with her and everything before we got married. She knew I was a drinker. She knew all my friends, and she tried to change me. And we were different people. We became different people. She changed after we got married. I didn't change. And I realized that we got married too young. And the marriage should have never really happened. It doesn't matter that there's a kid or anything now. And so that's why I got divorced. And that was my story. And that was the absolute truth. And that's what I believed. I left my wife. I went to put in all the stuff about 4 o'clock in the morning. The 4 o'clock in the morning shit, that's not important. That's not the real reason. I wouldn't have even thought about the 4 o'clock in the morning. I wouldn't have thought about not coming home and getting drunk every night. I wouldn't even thought that stuff wouldn't cut. She was trying to change me. We were different people. We got married too young. And that's my story. And you know, so not only is that the truth, I believed it. I believed it. And if that's the truth, then I didn't do anything wrong. And if that's the truth, I certainly don't owe an amends. If that's the truth, I'm basically a good guy. You know what I mean? As a matter of fact, it was her fault. That's the truth. So, now, but both stories are true. My story at 27 years of age, 28, 29, 30 years of age, was that she tried to change me. She changed. And that's why the marriage broke up and why she filed for divorce. That's my story. My story at 35 years of age, 4 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, is the second story. I got divorced because I was a selfish asshole. And because I had no real true love and caring for another person. And all I did is care about myself and having sex. That's my story, because I was selfish and I was immature and I hurt other people. That's the real story, okay? So here's the question. Who do you want to hang out with? Which guy do you want to hang out with? Do you want to hang out with guy number one or guy number two? Because all your life in the bar, gals, you've been hanging out with guy number one. Your entire life has been hanging out with guy number one. And guys, you've been hanging out with girl number one. So in here is a group of whatever, 50 people, 60 people. And some of them are guy number one, and some are girls number one, and some of them are guys number two. You know? And the difference between guy number one and guy number two and girl number one and girl number two is the fourth and fifth step. We see through a glass darkly, but soon we will all be revealed to know who and what you are. Do you want to hang out with somebody who knows the truth and sees the truth and understands the truth? Because what happens when you know the truth about yourself and you start changing, you set yourself for the other steps, and what happens is you have a deep sense of repentance. Not a word used much in AA, used a lot in Christian circles. I'm a Christian, but you know, you know what happens is, until you get to a point where you accept the fact that you're ashamed of yourself. You know, there's two types of, you know, there's this great line in Corinthians. He says there's something called self-pity. We all know what self-pity is, right? That leads to death. There's no getting out of self. That's like a drink. It's like a bottle called self-pity. It's a drink. You drink that shit, you know, self-pity. Gets you nowhere, kills you. But there's a different type of thing that sounds like it's related to self-pity, but it's not self-pity. It's becoming ashamed of yourself. It's getting to that deep sense of shame that usually happens when you hit bottom, where you're not filled with self-pity, but you're saying to yourself, what the fuck is wrong with me? How did I allow myself to get to this place? I need help. And that is godly sorrow. And that leads to something called repentance. That leads to something called change. That leads to something called going into Alcoholics Anonymous and not deluding yourself to thinking you're a real nice, super great person. You know what I mean? That you need help and there's something wrong with you. That leads to really growing up and changing. And a lot of that, growing up and changing and who you become, depends upon who you hang out with. It depends upon who you hang out with. Because who you hang out with will determine whether or not you're going to actually do the fourth step. And how are you going to do it? And how are you going to do the fifth step? Who you hang out with, that's the guy who's going to say, the person you hang out with, that's the guy who's going to say, How would you feel if it didn't bother you? That's the guy that's going to ask you the stupid question. That's the guy who's not going to accept your bullshit. That's the guy that's not going to allow you to get away with feeling sorry for yourself. That's the guy who's going to hurt your feelings. That's not going to be your friend, although he may be your friend. That's the guy who's going to love you, although it doesn't feel like love. Sometimes it feels like pain. That's the guy who's going to bring you up, not going to allow you to bullshit yourself because you're delusional. You know, because it's so easy for alcoholics to delude. You know, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I told you the story, and I'm going to end shortly. You know, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I graduated Departmental Honors Mathematics. I was going for my PhD in something, it doesn't matter what, and lawyer. And they stuck me with a guy who was a used car salesman from Chicago. Didn't even graduate the sixth grade. A guy named Bobby Sullivan. He was my sponsor for 7 years until he died. I was supposed to be sponsored by Jesus or Albert Einstein. They stuck me with Bobby Sullivan. He's the one who told me in my office, he said, when I showed him all my degrees, he said, well, you know, rectal thermometers have degrees. You know what they do with those. He's the one who told me when I told him I don't have to go to meetings on Thursday. He's the one who said, you know as much about life as a dog knows about his father. And I'm saying, what the fuck is that? And then he died. And then Joe Snyder took over. Joe Snyder, who worked in the post office, who retired from the post office. And he became my sponsor for like 10 years, you know. And Joe Snyder used to take me to the Arch Creek group. And everybody went to the Arch Creek group. It's not around anymore, I don't think. We'd have 200-300 people there that night. And everybody would show up there. And there was this one guy there, Bud Dunbar. And everybody would come and gather around Bud Dunbar. Because he was like the wisest guy there. Everybody thought highly about Bud Dunbar. Oh, he was really something, Bud. And we all wanted to hang around him. And my sponsor once said to me, I think he had like 40 years or something like that. And my sponsor had like 25. And he said to me, do you know what Bud does for a living? I mean, they come from all over. It's doctors, lawyers, judges, whatever. They come in there just to talk to Bud. And he says, do you know what Bud does for a living? And I figured he's like a psychiatrist or he's a professor. Or, you know, a CEO somewhere. He says, do you know what Bud does for a living? And I'd say, no. He says, he parks cars at the Eden Rock. You drive your car back up, and Bud would park your car for you. He was one of those guys. That's where they all came from, all over, 300 people, so they could hang out with Bud Dunbar. And then later on, I hung out with Ray O'Keefe, he was a lawyer and he was a circuit speaker. I hung around with him and then I went to start going to Bible study. I needed more. Somebody suggested Bible study. I went to Bible study. And all of a sudden, because I needed more than just some sort of fuzzy God, you know, when you have cancer, when things start getting rough, things start getting interesting, it's not enough to, well, God of love, the universal thing. I needed something I could latch on to. So I went to Bible study because that's what the founders did. And I was willing to go to any length. I was willing to go. All those guys became part of my we, and they had all done that. And I had read the big book, and I became willing to go to any length to do it. And I didn't really care. I cared less about being cool or whether you liked me and more about getting some relief. And so I went there, and I sat next to a guy who had 60 years, and his name was John Glenn. 60 years. But when I started, 50 years. And he was an alcoholic, and he was a Baptist minister, and hung out with him. And he introduced me to other people, like Pastor Carrie Miller, who I just spoke to on the phone. He's out in Colorado, and the people that hung around with him. And so those are the people I hung out with. You know, every person who sponsored me, I love them, they love me, and they had something I didn't have that I wanted. And they moved me forward, you know? And now I have another sponsor and other people and everything like that. They moved me forward. And the person you find, and I realized, you know, when I first came in, I used to say to my sponsor, my first one, I said, I know you're trying to brainwash me. He says, well, maybe your brain needs washing, you know? And it did. But I realized when I first came in, I said, I think this is like osmosis. I mean, I'd go out, when if I went to an AA meeting with them, we'd go out to dinner beforehand, then we go to the meeting, and then we go to Allison and we'd have ice cream afterwards till 1 o'clock in the morning. I just hung out with these guys. I was following these guys all around. I just wanted to sit there and listen to them talk. Mm-hmm. And they'd say things, and I'd ask them questions, and they'd say stuff, just how they think about stuff. You know what I mean? How they talk to, I'd watch them how they talk to other people with problems. You know, and I learned, you know, you start thinking, you start saying, wow, did you hear what Von said? Hey, did you hear what John said? John would take me to a restaurant. We'd start eating the food. This is not in AA. It's not in AA. We started eating the food. He'd say, what are you doing? He'd say, I'm eating. He says, you can't eat. We got to give thanks. We got to give thanks. He'd sit there and he'd bow his head and start praying in the middle of a Denny's. And I'm looking around seeing who's looking at me, you know? And he's praying. He's thanking the Lord for the food and for everything and for Russell and for everything in the world and praying for people. Mm-hmm. Like when he's 10-minute jobs and then he'd stop and say, now, Russ, he says, now you can. He says, now, Russ, the food will taste better because it's got the special ingredient. And I would go to AA meetings and they would talk about making God the central factor of their lives. And they would talk about not apologizing for God. And they would talk about we lose all prejudice against organized religion. Mm. And they would talk about making the decision for God. And all sorts of remarkable things happen. Because he'll give you everything you need if you stay close to him and perform his work well. And they talked about your real reliance has to be on God. And they didn't know what the fuck they were talking about. It was all phony bullshit. You know why? Because I hung out with John Glenn, who in the middle of a Denny's would stop me from eating and says, we got to give thanks. And he didn't give a shit who was around him. And he wasn't in AA room, you know, where everybody was holding hands and they were sort of forced to do it because he lived the fucking program. And you want to know something? God was the central fact of his life. He was the real deal. He was the genuine article. He was the genuine article. God was the central fact of his life. Bill Wilson, in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, and Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, says, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I keep talking about and telling other people. God was the centerpiece of his life. Bob Smith in Dr. Bob's Nightmare says, if you're an atheist, an agnostic, or have some other intellectual pride that keeps you from understanding what's in this book, I feel sorry for yourself, because he was the genuine article. That's what this book is all about. And in AA, they applaud atheism. They stand up proudly and say, I don't believe in it, proudly, and say shit. And people lap it up. And they lap it up because they're alcoholics, and they don't want to do any of this shit anyway. And they roll their eyes, and they make fun of people that talk about God. You got to look for the John Glenns in this world. You got to look for the Bob Sullivans and the... You got to look for them people, the Bob Sullivans and the John Glenns and the Ray O'Keefes.
And the Russell Spatz.
Well, whatever. Whatever. But the bottom line is, those are the people that are going to... Who you hang out with is going to determine what the hell you're going to be. And that's okay, because some people, you know, don't want what they had. They want what they had. They want what the world has. They want money, you know, they want to get laid again. You know, they want that blonde, they want that brunette, they want, you know, the house, they want the car, they want, that's fine. They don't even have a we. They don't even have even people that they want to hang out with or anything like that. They don't even know that deal. And let me tell you something, those people are few and far between. Don't kid yourself. When they talk about the 6 steps separating from the men from the boys, they're like one man, you know? Like one out of 200. They start talking about guys like John Glenn. They start talking about guys like Ray O'Keefe. Rare as hen's teeth around here. But they're here. I'll tell you, they are here. If you look for them, they're around, you know? And so what does that have to do with them? Well, that's you know, the fourth. You know, let me tell you something. With the 4th step and the 5th step and all those steps come really into play in your life. You know, because a lot of people, once they're done, that's it. Is when you're hanging around the men, and the women who you're accountable to. That's when, you know, because you'll forget about that 4th step and the 5th step and all. You'll do it and you'll say, I'm done with that. you're done with that and being the true alcoholic and the same person you are, you'll go right back to your old way of thinking. Because nobody's there to remind you, like, you know, you're thinking crazy. You know, I gotta hang out with people that have their head screwed on right. You know? And they think right. And they're not scared, because they love you, of telling you that stupid stuff. Stop thinking like that. You know, there's a guy that I know, that I love, that I care about, and he starts talking to me about something just the other day. It's sort of innocuous, but it's something that's in the news, that he's been driving him crazy. And then they did this, and then they did that, and then they did this, and he's just talking about stuff in the news. I said, stop talking about that shit. Stop even thinking about that shit. You know something? That's like, you're like drinking. You're like, you know what that stuff is? I know you read a newspaper, it's pornography to you. It's pornography. The stuff that I don't give a shit that it's current events. I don't even give a crap that it happens. You don't mean it happened. You're thinking about it, you're obsessed about it. It's like looking at child porn for you. Stop. I don't give a shit. I don't want to hear about it out of your mouth. Stop talking about it. He thinks it's safe because it's in the news. You understand? Nothing's safe for us. Nothing's safe for us. You start thinking about something that's going on in the news or something more than 3 or 4 times a week, and it keeps on coming up, and you're thinking about it, and you're talking about it to other people. It ain't safe. It's pornography. It's drink. It's like drinking. You know. You start to understand. Listen, there's only one thing to think. You got to focus on Him. Focus on the God of your understanding. You know. That's safe. That's safe stuff. You know. And you know something, then your life will have the special ingredient. You want a life with a special, isn't that what it says in the big book? It says, if you make a serious, that's what they say, sincere decision for God, all sorts of remarkable things. Don't you want remarkable things to happen in your life? You know, isn't that what you want? Don't you want to have remarkable things happen in your life, for God's sakes? If you're going to hang around here and put the dollar in the thing, you might as well go for the remarkable shit, you know? That's all I have to say. Thank you very much.